You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is David Rommel, a credentialed NBA writer, has covered the Heat for SB Nation, AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for Fansided and FanRec Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRommel13. Fortunately, my co-host Wes Goldberg isn't available today, but we do have a very special guest, a national NBA writer for FanRec Sports, as well as the host of the Talk Hoops podcast on the Leverage the Chat Network, a man known best for his great hair, as well as ability to talk hoops. That's Mr. Zach Harper. Zach, how are you?
I am excellent. We're in the weird part of the season where we have to believe every trade rumor, so I'm great.
There are several, lots of trades I'm sure that we'll get into that affect the Eastern Conference and the Miami Heat, so it's a very interesting part. But, you know, it's just, I was telling somebody about it today, it's so fun to watch this league and to realize that over the last few years how much it's evolved into a 365-day league. Like, nothing changes, nothing sleeps. It's always constantly moving. It's wonderful.
If I can throw a first world problem out there, yes, that I know everyone will very much empathize for and, you know, and feel bad, but I don't love the 365 aspect of the because I used to really love to be able to just like not do anything in August.
Oh, sure.
I really appreciated that time. And now, you know, poor me, I've got to work more in August than I normally do. So, like, if we could go like 335,
that sounds nice
with the NBA, I would love it. But now we've got, you know, Kyrie getting traded whenever he wants, and we got all kinds of rumors and stuff. So it's a mess. But at the same time, it is a lot of fun.
I mean, you've got a lot of pull. Can't you talk to Adam Silver, see if he can make it 335 instead of 365?
Yeah. You know, he and I will have coffee at the, you know, All-Star weekend, and I'll be like, look, Adam, one, we're shaving 10 games off, and two, we got to cut out August. I'm sure he'll be real receptive to that.
I think that's a really good idea. I'm looking forward to seeing how it shakes down and eventually getting the oral history of that shared cup of coffee. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I can get a 30 for 30 out of it. Right?
No doubt. All right. Well, we'll be getting your thoughts on the Heat and how they stack up with the rest of the Eastern Conference. We'll be getting some specific analysis on some of Miami's key players. And perhaps the best segment we've ever had on Locked On Heat, we'll be comparing specific Heat players to specific movies in the vast Nicholas Coppola filmography. But let's start off with some general Heat overview. It's always interesting, obviously, you know this as well as anybody, that fans can be very insular when it comes to their line of thinking, when it comes to their team. And as much as Wes and I like to portray a less biased, more general overview of this team, it's always so interesting to me to try and get somebody from a national media perspective to share their thoughts on the Heat this season, the future, the past of this team, and where they're going next, obviously. So I don't know how much Miami Heat you've watched this season. They're kind of in a weird nebulous phase, really. But what are your general thoughts of the Heat this season?
I'm just interested in how they survive. Like, that's what this team seems like to me, is just a team of survivors. Like, Spo, I couldn't be a bigger fan of Eric Spoelstra, right? Like, I mean, the job he's done, like, this team isn't good talent-wise, right? Like, there are some talented players. Like, Goran's really good. Hassan Whiteside has talent. Like, guys like Josh Richardson, they're good. James Johnson, good. But for the most part, you look at this team and where they should be in terms of talent, and it's just, it's not good. Yeah. Like, in terms of against the bigger teams in the East. And yet, they are as competitive as anybody. They play brilliant basketball. Like, they suck on offense, but they try to generate intelligent offense. They just don't make a lot of shots, right? But, like, they generate a lot of three-point looks, a lot of good three-point looks. Defensively, that's where they make all their money. Like, that, you know, they lock teams down. They do a great job of, as simple as it sounds, they do a great job of preventing shots from going in.
Yeah.
And they rebound like crazy. Like, you know, if they could get any kind of consistent offense generated, they'd be even better. But you just look at the job, and to me, Spo is the best asset they have. He is the, you know, the coach of the year so far, if we were going to stop the season today and give out awards. Like, he's the coach of the year. And Goran, you know, has been at an all-star level. They find so many ways to survive these big moments in games. And I think that's the most impressive. And I think for a lot of people, they could say, like, oh, well, you're actually disparaging the team. I actually think that's a better quality than being like, hey, this team's really talented and they win. Like, to be able to survive in the way they do, I think shows you everything that Pat Riley goes on about with this team, this franchise. It's like, it is the culture of the Miami Heat. Like, the culture of the Miami Heat is incredible.
You don't think that's overblown? Because again, that's like, it's so hard to separate sometimes the perspective of like a Miami fan base, you know, how they see this team evolving. And we get it inundated. You were there when the message was first kind of developed, I think, and you were right. Covering the team, and you started seeing those Heat culture advertisements and started working into almost everything the team puts out. But I mean, that culture has been in place since he joined the team in 95, and it's kind of evolved from Riley into Spoelstra. But you don't think that culture is overblown? You think that there's a real quantifiable aspect that makes this team better?
I do. I think it matters. I think to get people to buy into everything they do. I mean, look, like, Wayne Ellington is third on the team in shot attempts this year.
Oh, he's amazing. Right? Like we talk about all the time. He's intrinsic to what Miami does offensively.
It's absolutely. Ridiculous. Absolutely. But Wayne Ellington's not that good, right? Like, he can shoot. Don't get me wrong. He can shoot, but he's not that good of a player on the NBA level. Like, he is an average role player for what he, and yet he is so important to what they do. And they're 29-21 with Wayne Ellington taking the third most shots on the team. Like, that is culture. That isn't just like, oh, he's jacking up shots. Like, that is, we are going to maximize the efforts and the skills of what Wayne Ellington can do. Like, it seems like they maximize. The only point they don't really maximize is Hassan Whiteside.
Ooh, well, that's
and to me, that's more on him than them. And it's not that he's bad, right? I just don't think he plays up to what his contract should be.
Oh,
and I think he's gotten more criticism than maybe is fair, because I think it can be a lazy criticism of him. Just be like, he's not Rudy Gobert. He's not, you know, he's not Karl-Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid. So he's not that good. Like, he's a good player, but he's the only guy where I look at, I'm like, they're not maximizing his talents. Everyone else on the roster, they maximize, and that's why they're so good.
It's so hard to be even keeled on Hassan, because even a few weeks ago, I wrote about it, you know, for FanRag on his improvements and the fact that he made his concerted effort after he came back from injury to share the ball, something that we haven't seen at any point throughout his career, especially in the past 2.5 years with Miami. He's not a guy who passes the ball. Now he's doing it almost like just to prove a point, kind of like Chamberlain-esque, where he's like, you know what, I'm going to lead the league in assists, or at least try to have two per game or something like that. And he's really capable. Like, he's finding cutters going to the hoop.
Yeah.
He's made some really nice passes lately. So, but that's part of what feeds into that whole frustration. Like, what the hell? I mean, if you can do this all the time, why not do it during that stretch of the season where the offense looked absolutely miserable and you were holding the ball and putting up these terrible shots?
Right. I mean, and to be fair, like, he's banged up, right? Like, he's gone through, like, his body is not supporting him this season. Yeah. And so I think it can be frustrating. I think it'd be difficult to play through that. And maybe he feels the pressure of the contract along with that of like, hey, if I can't get back to this level, if I can't get back to being healthy, like, can I just, I don't know what goes through his head. Maybe that does, maybe it doesn't, but I think all that stuff plays into it. But yeah, that's the thing is, I like, you look at him, you look at his size, you look at his mobility, you look at his skill set. Like, that dude should be one of the best centers in the league. And he's just not. And he's not even close. And so that's why, like, he's still a good player and he's still valuable to them. But that's where I say, like, they're not maximizing what he can do or coming close to it, because he should be so much better than he is. And maybe that's injuries. Maybe it's unfair to say that about him this season. But you just think, like, where this team could be in terms of how dangerous they are. And granted, this isn't the 90s, right? Like, you don't really live through centers anymore. They're very important. Some teams do, but you don't have to live through a center in order to be successful, as the Heat have proven. Right. But if they could get him to be the star that he's capable of being, this team would just be in a much more dangerous position.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. He just doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that's really introspective at that level. Like,
sure, and he probably is. And, like, you know, to be fair, like, he didn't make himself this big, right? Like, he just kind of, like, I think there is that very real thing where we're like, hey, you're a monster. Go be a monster. Go, you know, go, like, why don't you love this? It's like, man, this dude didn't choose to be 7'1" or whatever he is. Like, he didn't choose it. Like, there is just kind of a, well, if I'm going to be this big and I'm this agile and I'm this skilled, maybe I will just play basketball and collect a check. You know, I'm not saying he's that, you know, that bored with everything, but, you know, I do think that's something we don't consider enough of, like, you know, this is an easier way for him to make an incredible living than other ways. Yeah, and maybe that's good enough for him.
He's going to make a lot of money, and I think he's okay with it. He can, I'm sure he can live with some of the complaints that you and I have of his lack of maximizing potential.
Oh, I'm going to go out on a limb. I don't think he cares what I think.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So let's kind of take a little step back then. Obviously, the Heat have their issues. They're currently ranked fourth in the Eastern Conference. Not that that means much. I know you're a big, well, I don't know if fan is the right word, but let's say you're not particularly high in the Eastern Conference. It doesn't really
– East. I know we really like, we want to Tinkerbell clap this thing back to life. The East sucks. It does. And I'm not trying to, Cleveland is a disaster.
They are.
They are an utter dysfunctional disaster. They're 10 games over 500 and they're the three seed as the worst defense in the league. Or maybe the Kings are still the worst defense. As the second worst defense in the league. And they're the three seed. And it's just because the East sucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty fair. I mean, obviously, at the start of the season, you start to see some teams kind of build up there, and you're thinking, oh, then maybe they can build momentum, and then all of a sudden they collapse and everything settles back to normalcy, and then you go, oh, well, yeah, it's the Eastern Conference being the East again. So,
but which, if you're the Heat or the Bucks, like, take advantage of it.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, so that's the bigger issue then, is that obviously the Heat are in a position where they can make some noise, kind of, where they can kind of, you know, make some room there in the top four, maybe play for a home court advantage. It's interesting because, you know, obviously this team probably doesn't have a very high ceiling, as you pointed out. They're kind of doing the most that they can. They lost Deion Waiters for the rest of the season, so that kind of limits what they can do, or maybe it's helpful. I mean, that's we'll get your thoughts on Deion later on, but you know, as far as the Eastern Conference is concerned, where do you see Miami kind of fitting into the big scheme of things?
I mean, they're kind of in that middle area, which I don't really know what you do with. I think the four seed is, I mean, obviously the four seed right now, but I think the four seed is very realistic for them. Maybe they even get up to the three seed, depending on if Cleveland actually, you know, gets their stuff together or they make a move or whatever. But to be a three, to have home court advantage in the first round and potentially get into the second round, if I told you before the season started, this Miami Heat team is going to make the second round of the playoffs, you know, I think you would be like, that's a really successful season.
Yeah.
And that's part of like kind of cementing this, you know, what we talk about with like the culture and everything of like, look, we don't have to have the best players. We don't have to have a great roster. We don't have to have all these flaws ironed out. We're just going to play harder and we're going to play smarter and we're going to be coached better than you every night. And we're going to be successful because of that. Now, if you want to come join that, you know, talking to prospective free agents, think of the success you could help us have.
Yeah.
I think that's what this is about. This season, to me, is a pitch for future free agents, whether that's this summer, next summer, whenever, of like, this is the organization, this is the environment you want to be in. And so I think that's, when you look at the East playoff picture with in regards to the Miami Heat, it's just like, you just want to keep building on that. You don't want to get to the first round and get swept, right? Like, I don't think they have to make the second round, but you got to be competitive, and they're in a position to be really competitive and make some noise.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, hey, look, if they can advance to the third seed and face like a tough Milwaukee in the sixth seed or something like that, that would be a really interesting. If they go seven games against Milwaukee, a team that a lot of people saw as being built for the future, even if they struggled because of Jason Kidd earlier in the season, I think you'd still view that as a high success for this Miami team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think like if they can find themselves into a showdown with someone like Indiana, like they can beat Indiana in the first round, right? Like they could beat Milwaukee. They could beat Washington depending on the health of John Wall. Like they can take any of these teams on. You just don't want to, falter at a point where you do face Cleveland as they're figuring it out in the first round, or you do face Toronto and Toronto maybe has a little too much firepower for you, or for some reason they drop to the eighth seed and they face Boston. That could be a really tough series for them to look good in, right? Like no matter what the season series is, like that's just, in the playoffs, it's just going to be different.
It sounds like you're discounting Kelly Olynyk's greatness there.
Well, I mean, Kelly Olynyk is either going to tell them all of Boston's secrets, or he's a mole and he's going to sink the Heat from the inside.
Oh my God, that's feeding into a lot of the fears of this Heat fan base. It's so funny how people have kind of evolved their line of thinking about Kelly, because like he comes to the season and you lived in Miami. He is as far from Heat, like the superficial Heat, I mean, Miami appearance as you can possibly be. And yet there he is. But it's kind of like Chris Anderson. You were there when Anderson came to the team. Like he was just so embraced by this city that he didn't fit into Miami culture whatsoever. And yet there he is and everybody loves him for it. And now Kelly is kind of showing the same thing. Like he plays hard. He works hard. He's making really nice passes. And his skill set is so different from Hassan Whiteside's that everybody's like, holy cow, this is amazing.
Yeah, and you think, especially with his skill set, being able to stretch the floor, like he could probably shoot more three-pointers per game.
Oh, yeah.
He could probably play more minutes per game than he has, but he could probably shoot more threes, even, you know, be more of a, not necessarily the exact same player, but a Ryan Anderson volume, you know, relative volume in terms of attempts and stuff, because he has that. And that's so important for this team because, one, they try to generate a lot of threes, and two, they need shooting because they're what, like middle of the road in terms of percentage.
Yes.
Exactly. So like, and for a team that that struggles to generate so much offense, like you do see how he could be so important in a playoff series for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So here's a larger point then. We'll only touch on this a little bit, but one of the concerns for the Heat is their future. And I think this goes back to the way they finished last season. You know, obviously at the start of the year when they went 11-30 and what have you, and it was obviously a rebuilding year with the loss of Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh still and wherever he was at that point, recovering from the blood clots, et cetera. You know, a lot of people saw this team and were like, you know what, let's finally embrace the tank. Let's see if we can get a high draft choice. Let's see what can happen. And I think even the front office was probably fitting into that line of thinking as well. And then all of a sudden they kind of snap into it for the second half, go 30-11, et cetera. And that changes everything. And then they kind of rebuild this team, kind of bring everything back, everybody back from last year. They signed Dion, re-signed James Johnson, and they added Kelly Olynyk, et cetera. But I think a lot of people in the fan base watch this team and they're not happy with it. Like, even though you and I would qualify a second round playoff exit as a huge success for this team,
yeah,
a lot of people are frustrated by it because they want a contender or nothing. And I feel like that's such a myopic view. So I'm curious how you feel about it. Because look, from a Miami Heat fan perspective, like, they've won three championships over the last, what, 12 seasons now?
Yeah.
I mean, they've made the playoffs a whole bunch. They've made the finals a couple of times since then. It's like, this isn't Minnesota. This isn't Orlando. This isn't
right.
Teams like that, or Sacramento, that have been mired in not even mediocrity for so long. It's just this mentality of all or nothing is kind of frustrating from my perspective. So I'm curious how you feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, you go to four straight finals, that's going to color expectations no matter what the player in the jersey is, right?
Yeah,
I get it from that standpoint. I also think, like, when you go from having LeBron at small forward to having Lou Alding at small forward in a couple of months, right? Like, yeah, you just got to change your expectations. And I think you have to recognize, well, you don't have to, but I think you should recognize that when you lose someone like LeBron – and Chris Bosh has these blood clots, and then Dwayne Wade gets old, right?
Yeah.
Like things, it's hard to recover from that. And yeah, it takes more than 2 years to recover from that. Now, I think that you can look at the makeup of this roster and the money owed and be like, yo, this is not okay. Because they're basically, you know, near the luxury tax already for next season.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you know, this team is not good enough. You know, maybe Deion Waiters gets healthy in the offseason and everyone, and they can maximize everyone, and then you feel better about this team. But this team is not good enough to be a luxury tax team. And so that's a concern in terms of the makeup of everything. Because that Tyler Johnson contract is gonna hurt. Like, it really is gonna hurt. But you can maybe move a couple of these pieces and try to clear some space by 2020 when there are a lot of Anthony Davis is a free agent.
Right. Yeah, it's just weird because it almost seems like fans are willing to bank on mystery box A, like, you know, a 45 win season for the next couple of years potentially isn't what they'd want. They'd rather have the possibility of a high draft pick and maybe turning around the franchise and then in 3 or 4 years becoming a potential contender. But it's, you know, it's so, again, myopic. You know, it's not like a high draft choice. Look at Orlando, is going to lead immediately towards playoff success and title contention. I mean, and I know that the makeup of this team and the front office, you figure they'd be able to swing a deal or lure somebody in free agency, but that's never a guarantee. And that seems so weird to expect that would work out that way. Like, when instead of just embracing this team that plays hard every night, that, like you said, survives, that's, to me, that's more fun to watch than knowing that they're going to compete for a title, I think. Just being able to see this team kind of try and struggle and persevere somehow beyond their limitations, which are so obvious, is a much more enjoyable experience. But I guess that's colored by my own perspective.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I mean, I'm someone that I think a lot of people know at this point, if you follow me at all, like, I just don't like, you know, I've been a Timberwolves fan, you know, since they've been in the league, and like, that's been my team or whatever, but like, I don't get emotional about them.
Yeah,
I mean, you see Kevin Garnett's career get wasted for 12 years. You kind of lose emotion in all this. So, I think, like, some of us are just detached from that aspect. Whereas some people, like you look at, like, the Le Batard show, Mike Ryan, right? That dude loves everything about the Heat, and he called, like, he is emotionally invested. He's not going to think about it in the same way, and that doesn't make it worse or better, right? But it's just like, they're just, some people are in it for different reasons. I'm in it for the process of it all. Some people are in it for the wins of it all. Like, and that's just going to color how, like, you know, mystery box B could be anything. It could be a 50 win team that loses in the second round. How fun would that be? Well, that's maybe what they have now, right? Like, you never know what like, but that's the thing. That's why people love the idea of a rebuild, is because anything could happen. Even if you end up with the exact same type of success, anything could happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, later on the show, we'll be comparing Heat players to Nick Cage's finest films. But next, we'll get Zach's thoughts on specific Heat players and how they're contributing this season. But first, fantasy basketball fans, you're going to want to listen to this. If you love fantasy basketball, then you're going to want to try our new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other sites or apps. It was launched just a few years ago with the idea that the best part of fantasy basketball is the draft itself. Everywhere else, you only get to draft once in your fantasy leagues, not with Draft. You play with a live snake draft with no salary cap, and you play with other people. There's no multi-entry or player overlap, so you don't have to worry about pros gaming the system. Draft is designed to make fantasy sports simple, fair, and fun. Here's how it works. Just download the app, and you're ready to start. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so it's easy to join one right now. There's little to no lineup management. Just set it and forget it. No trades, no waiver wire, and Draft even takes care of any last-minute injuries for you. And, of course, you play for cash. Who likes cash? Everybody. Draft starts at just $1, goes up from there, so there's one for everybody. It's easy to play, easy to win, so get started today by downloading the app or going to draft.com. And for a limited time, new players get a free entry when you make your first deposit simply by adding the promo code LOHEAT. That's LOHEAT. Get started today. Play a free game to win some real money by using the promo code LOHEAT on your first deposit. All right, let's get into some specific player analysis. We already talked about it a little bit, but Hassan Whiteside, obviously, he's a player that I guess raises the ceiling and somewhat lowers it at the same time, because you never know what you're getting from him. There are games like last night against the Dallas Mavericks where he played really, really engaged. And of course, this is a really bad Mavericks team, so it's not like those, you know, that's not exactly the barometer you want to measure yourself by. But when you see performances like this, you see him not playing in the fourth quarter. And then again, there's that attitude issue there. And it's hard to kind of gauge where he fits into the team makeup. So, I mean, you've seen Hassan up close. What are your thoughts on Whiteside, and what's the next step for him, if there's even a next step for him to reach?
I think there is a next step. I mean, I think he needs to get better defensively in terms of being able to defend pick and rolls better in the perimeter. And, you know, maybe some of the criticism is overblown with him, but it's still, for what people want his reputation to be, he's not close to it, right? Like, he's a good rim protector, but that doesn't mean he's a good defender. Like, I remember specifically a game in Utah last season, Heat at Utah, and they were just putting Gordon Hayward in a pick and roll against Hassan Whiteside as much as possible, because the Jazz, Jazz flat out did not respect him as a defender. And that's not the same of being like, oh, we're going to go dunk on him because he's, you know, they like, you know that he can block shots at the rim, but they wanted to put him in the middle of the floor, and he has to at least look somewhat comfortable in the middle of the floor. So he needs that. And then it's got to be a team mentality on offense, like better screens, more passing. Like, and I think the key is like Pat is saying to him, like, look, you can get the ball back if you pass it. Right. Like, it doesn't mean you're done for the possession. Like, you get the ball back. Like, you just have to, you could do, I do think he's so skilled, and I think he's more skilled than he shows. You could do so much with him on offense. And I think he's limiting himself.
It's interesting. Yeah. Because defensively in particular, like, you know, you're saying he was, you know, being roasted by Hayward last year. And so it kind of, I don't know if discounts necessarily, but it's like it diminishes the impact of his injury this year, because it's just, well, that's who he's always been.
Right.
And I don't know why that is. Is he just slow footed? Is he just not responsive? I've actually followed this, and I hate even suggesting this aloud, but I wonder if sometimes, like on offense, when he holds the ball so much, I don't know that he always has the mental wherewithal to kind of make that pass. Like, it takes split second recognition that he just may not have.
Yeah. I mean, some guys don't have it, you know? So, and I don't know that that's, and if that's the case and that's a known thing, then that's on Spoelstra and the Heat to work around. Right. I mean, it's not just, it does go both ways in terms of how you do that. And they do a solid job of it, but there needs to be more, whatever it is, there needs to be more out of him, because he is good and he can have a huge impact.
Are you concerned with the fact that he doesn't play as much in the fourth quarter? Because, like, to me, the makeup of this team, and you kind of hinted at it as well, is just like everybody steps up on a night-to-night basis. You don't know where that big production, and I use big in quotes, you can't see them, but I'm using it, because, you know, you never know who's going to be the star of the night. You know, it might be Ellington, it might be Olynyk. But Hassan not playing the fourth quarter concerns some people because, again, I think you see that contract. You assume he's going to be there in clutch minutes. But he just doesn't necessarily work in today's NBA. Like, having him out on the floor in the waning moments of a close game isn't necessarily beneficial if another team's going to go small. So are you concerned with the fact that they don't use him as much in the fourth?
Yes and no. I'm more concerned from a standpoint of, can he handle that? Right? Is he going to tear down the locker room? Not tear down the locker room. That's dramatic. But is that going to affect the locker room? Is that going to affect his personality on the team and his, you know, his mental makeup to not play a lot of fourth quarter minutes? If he can handle that, then I don't think it's a big deal. If he is just a guy, and granted, he's getting $25 million a year or whatever, so it's tough for some people to accept this, but if he can get you through those first three quarters to where they're in a position to close out these games without him, that's still not bad. It is still about the team winning, right? And they're winning right now. So I think that as long as he's okay with that balance, as long as they keep finding that balance, I don't think it's a big deal, but it is a volatile situation.
Publicly, he said all the right things. So I'm kind of inclined to think that might be the case. Like, he's, again, never struck me as the kind of guy who's going to be, well, he's going to say one thing publicly if he feels something completely different. Like, he's pretty open about his feelings, however limited or whatever they might be. So I feel like it's going to work out. But again, it could change, obviously. And that depends on whether or not the team wins and kind of maintaining his potential, you know, his positive outlook on the team and everything else. How about Goran Dragic? You know, I love Goran. He's a great guy personally. And I think he's really fun to watch. But you see the team, you see their limited ceiling, and you see, you know, point guards throughout the league, and you wonder whether or not he's a guy that you might want to build around. He's not a superstar. He's a very, very good player, but he's not a superstar. And obviously, with the trade deadline coming up close, a lot of people have talked about Goran possibly being moved. What are your thoughts on Dragic?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm a huge fan. There were years where I did not understand the Goran thing. Like, I thought he was like overvalued in Phoenix. Like, I just didn't think he was all that good. Even the year he made All NBA third team, I was like, he's fine, but you know, I'm not a big fan. Like, he's good. He's just flat out good. He knows how to control a game. He's so good attacking the basket. He's so good attacking the pick and roll. I think his numbers are deceiving. I think he's so much better than his numbers that he puts up. I'd like him to be a little bit more accurate from three. You know, I think that's a bit of a problem. The tricky thing with him is that we're in such a point guard saturated league at this point. And he is an above average point guard, but if he's not in that like top six or seven, I do think there is an idea of like, what is the, you know, is there a point of diminishing returns with him? And you know, he's getting up there, and like, he's in his 30s now. So, there will be a decline, but there is, that's a tricky situation for a lot of, like, you see that in Charlotte with Kemba, right? Like, Kemba's really good. Kemba's an all-star caliber player, but at what point does it matter? Because there's so many good point guards in this league, and it feels like we're just getting more and more of them and not losing any. Is there a certain point where that position, not that it doesn't matter, but you can't separate yourself with a guy like Goran being the best player on your team?
Yeah, it's tough. You kind of want to write it out. And I know acquiring him a couple seasons ago, he was never supposed to be the top player on this team.
Exactly.
He was going to compliment, you know, Wade and Bosch and even Whiteside as he was just starting to develop. So it's the expectations have changed, and he's carried the load. And his evolution as a leader is one of the things that really gets undervalued. And I'm glad you made the point, because it's one I've brought up again a number of times, that he just seems like to control the way he controls the game and has to kind of gauge guys like James Johnson and Hassan Whiteside and their level of interest, because it varies so much from game to game, and trying to keep them involved while staying aggressive for his own shots. It's such a challenge, and that he handles it as well as he does, I think, doesn't get talked about enough. So I'm glad you pointed that out. But from the other perspective then, from the older player on the team to the youngest, Bam Adebayo, have you seen anything from the rookie this year? Because he's already beloved in South Florida. Like, I mean, my litmus test was going to a bar on Christmas Day, the day before or after Christmas. I can't remember when they played. And seeing a bunch of drunk guys talking about Bam Adebayo. They love Adebayo. In comparison to another guy we'll talk about, Justice Winslow, they love Adebayo's efforts. They love his defensive intensity. And I'm curious what you think of the rookie.
Yeah, I don't think he's any good because he's a rookie, right? Like, rookies aren't good. There are very few rookies who are actually good, but you can see, like, this dude's going to be something. I don't know that he's a star of a future franchise, but, like, he's just going to be – he looks like one of those role players who everyone will wish they had.
That's fair. Have you seen him bring the ball up court? Like, he is – for a guy that size and that strong,
yeah,
he's impressive.
It is. I also never think he should bring the ball up the court. Like, I think it's a fun thing when it happens and, like, oh, this rookie big man, bring the – I don't think it should ever happen. I think you let him pass in the half court. All that stuff is fine, but I don't like the idea of him bringing the ball up the court. Like, to me – I don't mean this as harshly as it's going to come off if anyone knows my opinion of him as a player. It reminds me a little bit of Anthony Randolph. Like, Anthony Randolph would grab a rebound and start bringing the ball off the floor, and everyone's pleading with him to find a guard because something bad could happen if he doesn't, and something bad would usually happen. Adebayo's not that extreme, but I think you could get to a point where, like, man, get the ball, take a dribble. Like, don't get wrong, take a dribble, find a guard, go run the floor, rim run, get a dunk. Like, that's what I want to see out of him. But he is, you know, I'd like him to be a better rebounder. I'd like him to be a better rim protector, but he's also a rookie. And so to expect, like, I know there's been some discussion of, like, is he actually going to be a good defender if the team is worse with him defensively right now? The team should be worse defensively. Like, he is a rookie, and this is a great defensive team. Like, it would be weird if he was helping their defense in any way. But you just see, like, you see the effort that he puts out there. You see the versatility and the switchiness and all that. Like, he is going to be a very fun player and a really good role player. I didn't like the draft pick at the time because he was okay, right? But you didn't see a ton out of him in college. And with having Whiteside and Toe, you're just like, I don't know how this fits or whatever. But it doesn't have to fit right now. It just has to fit in the future, and I think it will fit in the future. And I already relinquished all of my disparaging remarks about the pick from June.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I think so many people were shocked at it because he was not a guy that was on our radar. And had Denver not made that trade, they would have selected Donovan Mitchell, which I think is a guy that a lot of players wanted. And that would have changed the franchise considerably. They wouldn't have re-signed Deion. They would have built around Mitchell. And who knows what could have happened. He probably would not have evolved into the player he is in Utah, but it's fair. And again, so the Adebayo pick just kind of came out of nowhere. And you start to see footage of him shooting in warmups and when he's practicing for Pat Riley and things of this sort. And you go, wow, he's got some flashes. I saw him in summer league. He looked really impressive, but that's summer league. So you take it for what it's good for. But he's raw, but he's also fun to watch.
I think you see potential with him, but potential and something tangible just aren't the same thing. So you'll see flashes and they'll kind of get you to ignore the bad things happening, right? Because you don't want to pay attention to the bad. Like, the flashes are the fun thing with him, right?
Yeah.
He's a couple years away from, I think, truly mattering. But once he does start mattering, like, he's going to be good.
All right. So one last player we'll talk about then, and this is a guy that's on the other side of that spectrum from the fan perspective, Justice Winslow. And now, as he's really coming along, in my opinion, this season – it just seems like he is so associated with a negative perspective of his offense and what he does for this team. And I think everybody's soured on his performance. Obviously, he missed most of his second year due to injury, and he's just kind of – he's been injured this year as well, so he's kind of rounding into shape. But I feel like he's playing a valuable role. I'm curious how you, from a national perspective, see Winslow's impact on this team.
Yeah, I was a big Winslow guy going into the draft. I really want him to be good. I think he's a better playmaker than he's been. I don't trust the 3-point numbers right now. You know, like, we're going off of what, like, 60 attempts or something like that. Like, I don't trust it. We're five makes that are misses away from that number looking completely different, right? So I don't buy the accuracy right now. But if he, you know, this is the if with him, like, if he stays healthy and if he can knock down a jumper, he just becomes such an important role player. So I really want him to be good, but I just, until he proves that he's healthy, and I don't know what that point is. I just don't know how you feel good about him moving forward because you're always waiting for that, you know, injured shoe to drop.
Yeah. Yeah. That fit is tough to really gauge. And right now it seems like he's kind of fitting nicely as the backup point guard, the de facto playmaker in the second unit there. And he's really good at it. When he brings the ball up, he's in control. He makes some really nice, sharp passes. He seems to have that kind of awareness that other players might not have. So that's great. There are concerns, obviously, of his ability to finish at the rim, which has not been good this year. And so, yeah, you're right. His offense is still a step behind, but his playmaking is, I think, ahead of where a lot of people expected it to be. So for now, it seems like maybe that's his best role. At this point, I mean, people are kind of on the fence as far as whether or not he should be included in any future trade package. I'm not so sure. Like, I still believe in his potential, but I'm honestly not sure whether or not he'll ever reach it. And I don't know if it happens here in Miami. It might be better for him to move elsewhere so that he can reach his potential.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that also comes in, like, one, who are you bringing in? Two, are you getting rid of one of those contracts? Because the nice thing about him is currently, and it's not for much longer, but currently he's on a very nice contract. Right, for a guy contributing off the bench, like he is in a good contract, but you just you know, once he's up for an extension and everything, how do you determine that number? Can you let him get to restricted free agency and then have to match and go even deeper in the luxury tax? Like, there are just so many complications with that. That's a tricky situation. And like, all right, maybe all he'll ever be is middle management Andre Iguodala, right? Still a pretty good player.
Yeah. That's still fine. That is very fine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, does it justify the hype of when they, you know, when they ended up with him and Charlotte didn't take 1,000 draft picks for all that stuff? Does it justify all that discussion? No, but he can still be really good.
Would it be enough to say, so long as he's better than Frank Kaminsky, that he's proven his worth in this league?
I don't know that should be the baseline for any NBA player at this point. Like, I get what you're asking, but I don't think that shouldn't be the hurdle to get over.
Wow, yeah, we're big Kaminsky fans on this show, so I mean, I take that kind of personally. All right, stay tuned as we compare specific Heat players to some of the finest films in Hollywood history. But first, a quick reminder to make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. To leave us a review on iTunes to help other Heat fans discover this show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team now as the Super Bowl is gearing up, plus Locked On Fantasy Basketball, the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, let's get into it. We've never done this before. I'm not sure how much prep you need, but I think you're fully qualified. This is an interesting thing. If anybody's followed you, and I can't imagine anybody listening to our show and not following you on Twitter.
I'm sorry if you do. It's a lot of nonsense.
Oh, you're one of the best followers in basketball Twitter. Let's be honest. If not the Twitterverse in general.
I think I'm one of the best followers in Nick Cage Twitter. I don't know about basketball Twitter.
Is there a Nick Cage Twitter?
I think it's just me, honestly.
Oh, okay. That's fair. Why Nick Cage? I mean, I know he's awesome. I know he's Nick Cage. He's part of Hollywood royalty.
Yeah, he is. He's a Coppola. I don't know how many people know about it. Yeah, he's like Coppola's nephew? Like grandnephew or something like that.
Grandnephew. I didn't
maybe
know.
Just, maybe, just ne- maybe just nephew. Maybe it's just nephew.
Sure.
But yeah, like I don't know how many people believe this. Like, he used to be a great actor.
Okay.
Like, he's won an Academy Award. I think he's been nominated twice for Best Actor. Like, he is legitimately talented as an actor who kind of went crazy, lost a lot of money, owes a lot of money to the IRS, and now is just pumping out bad movie after bad movie. But I, one, appreciate his acting,
okay,
his acting style. Two, I appreciate his insanity that he's shown on the state on the screen in the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
And three, I love bad movies because – to me, it's fascinating to think about the process of making that movie. Like, when you see a horrible scene in a movie and you're like, how does that make the cut? This is what I think about. What didn't make the cut? Like, how is that, like, that scene right there, that delivery of that horrible line and everything, that was the best take they had. What else happened? So that's where my mind goes. So that's why I'm all in on these Nick Cage Netflix movies.
I'm always so worried about, like, acting. There are times when I feel like the acting just becomes like, you can feel that they're acting in a scene and that kind of makes it really awkward to watch.
Yeah.
And especially when it's a bad scene like that, it's like, how are you in this and not realize what a turd of a movie you're making at the time?
Yeah. I mean, in some of them, it's just for the paycheck.
All right. Well, I mean, that's fair. I mean, I've never delved into acting. I don't intend to at any point in my future, but it just feels so like I hate theater kids. I don't, were you a theater kid?
No. I was in The Tempest in fifth grade, and they asked me to play a drunk person, which is weird to ask a fifth grader to play. And other than that, I've never acted in my life.
Nice. How did you handle the role? Did you get?
I just stumbled around and stuff. Like I don't like I just and, it, and like the thing I went to a Catholic school.
Yeah.
So it's not like a Catholic school doing the Tempest. You know, I'm supposed to pretend to be drunk at some point on stage. Like that's weird.
You didn't go all Danny Day-Lewis and get into the role and pretend to be a drunk person.
No, as a 10 year old, I didn't start drinking and then like to really connect with the character.
Well, that's too bad because I'm sure that probably would have made the play much more interesting. But. All right, let's just jump into it then. Here's a guy who obviously a lot of fans love. He's got his own kind of mystique about him. The player nicknamed Bloodsport, James Johnson.
Ooh.
What kind of Nick Cage movie would he be?
He's Face Off.
Face Off.
Like criminally underappreciated. A lot of action. A lot of stuff going on. I actually think Nick Cage acts his ass off in that movie.
That's
like he's
right and Travolta.
Yeah, John Travolta. So for those who don't know, like they essentially swap faces and have to mimic the other person. So it is essentially Nick Cage playing John Travolta,
yes,
and John Travolta playing Nick Cage, and they both do a really good job of like that inner struggle of trying to pretend to be the other person while still staying true to yourself and all that crap. So I actually think it's really good. There's a lot of action. A lot of explosions. I feel like, you know, what James Johnson can do physically is an explosion at any time. A lot of versatility, and it's just underappreciated. So I would say James Johnson is Face Off.
That's an interesting comparison there. I like what you just brought up about kind of having this duality to you, and I think Johnson's journeyman career and kind of resuscitating it here.
Yeah.
It kind of fits in also with Travolta because I think it was along those same lines, like right after Pulp Fiction when Travolta was kind of
right
becoming an actor again and finally being recognized as an actor after the 80s, I guess. So it's interesting there. I wonder if that kind of makes a lot of sense. I like the Face-Off comparison there. All right, let's get on to it. And Hassan Whiteside, that's a tough one.
This is a tough one.
What movie didn't live up to its potential?
You know what? I feel like if you're a Whiteside fan at this point, this is more of a cult following than like a real fan base, you know, not to say you're not real fans, but I feel like the Whiteside stuff is, and maybe I'm being too harsh and maybe I'm not tapping into Miami sports culture enough and the fan base enough. So I could be far removed from this, but I feel like it's a cult following. The Wicker Man.
Ooh.
Wicker Man is something that like on paper should be like a lot better than it is. And there's some really funny moments. There's some really memeable moments. And we know that Hassan with his 2K rating comments and with his Snapchat life and everything, like there's some very meme worthy moments and socially incredible moments with Hassan, but it leaves you wanting a lot more. And it just, at a certain point, you start wondering if the money was worth it. That might be really harsh, but that's what I'm going with.
No,
I feel like The Wicker Man only has a cult following at this point.
I love it. I've never seen The Wicker Man. I know it's a remake.
It is a disaster.
Okay.
I mean, The Wicker Man is way harsher than I mean to put on Hassan Whiteside, but that's what I could come up with off the top of my head.
Is it on Netflix? Is it on one of those movies you can see?
It might be on HBO Go.
Really?
It was on, or maybe Cinemax or something, like Max Go or something. It was on one of those channels for a long time. I don't think it's on Netflix, but you know, for a $3.99 rental at some point, you have a drink or something. Like, it's not the worst evening. It's not the best evening you can have, but it's not the worst evening either.
Okay, I'll try it. I'll give it a shot just for you. All right, let's go on. Tyler Johnson, you pointed out the contract. That's kind of how everybody views him. But there's some physical aspects of a guy like Johnson that he plays through injury, the missing teeth, the rather unfortunate nickname Bumpy. I mean, those are a lot to digest there when it comes to Tyler Johnson. What kind of Nick Cage movie is he?
Man, Ghost Rider?
Ooh, that was terrible.
There's some action there. There's some, like, if we're going to go with the physical appearance stuff that Heat fans want to bring up with him all the time, you know, like, there's some weird CGI in that movie. My favorite part about, and this has nothing to do with Tyler Johnson or any kind of comparison, my favorite part of Ghost Rider is there was a legitimate controversy on, like, message boards of whether or not Nick Cage's ab muscles were real or were they CGI'd in the movie.
I remember this.
To the point that the director on the director's commentary for the DVD refuted rumors that they were CGI'd. Like, this is something they talked about on the director's commentary of the DVD. I don't know how this ties into Tyler Johnson in any way, but that's what I'm going with.
Well,
his athleticism. Yes. He's got a lot of bounce.
Yeah, some, that's it.
Cool action in Ghost Rider. Not a lot of cool action. There's a little bit of cool action. There's a daredevil aspect to it because he's like, you know, he jumps motorcycles or some crap that. So I'll say Tyler Johnson's athleticism ties into that in some horrible way.
Nice. Yeah, I could see that. I could see, like, you question whether or not...
And there's a big price tag, right? There's a big price tag.
Yeah, and I can't believe they made a second one. They did, right? Spirit of Vengeance?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nah, it's worse than the first one.
Maybe that's what we can expect once he starts getting paid $20 million a year.
Oh, Tyler Johnson. That's a good... Yeah, you'd be like, wow, why did this happen? Why did we go to this point?
That's sad. And not a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. I think Sean Marks also funded the second Ghost Rider movie. That's just a lie. I know that didn't happen.
No, I could see it. He's totally somebody that would love it. Dion Waiters. I don't know how you feel about Dion.
I love Dion. I love Dion so much. I will excuse any flaw with Dion. I am such a fan. I love the personality. I love the attitude. I love Con Air.
Okay, there you go. That's perfect. I don't think anything else needs to be said. If you haven't seen Con Air, then quit listening to the podcast. I mean, I don't know what you're doing with your life.
And go watch it 10 times right now. And then I will say that there is not a better way to spend a night with a drink than Con Air.
So that's the opposite end of the spectrum then. Yeah. It's not the Wicker Man.
It's the exact opposite of the Wicker Man.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Udonis Haslam, the captain. I mean, he's beloved in Miami. So him as a Nick Cage movie should be an interesting comparison.
Oh, man, I got to do something very respectful here. Oh man.
What's the movie that shows off? No, not his acting chops. That's not enough. It can't be Leaving Las Vegas.
No, because that's a very depressing movie.
Well, no, I guess not.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll go. I'm gonna go. Matchstick Men.
Ooh.
Matchstick Men is like, I think people just look at it of like, here's Nick Cage, so it can't be good. But it's actually really, really solid movie. Sam Rockwell's in it. I don't know what that has to do with Udonis Haslam, but I think it's just like, it's one that the real like Nick Cage heads will ride for. It's one that's at like something you respect. It's a good part of the catalog. I feel like that's Udonis Haslam in the Heat culture, right? Like, never one of the best players, but he's a champion a few times over. He kind of embodies what's good about the Heat and all that stuff. Matchstick Men is a caged lifer. Udonis is a Heat lifer. I think it works.
This is perfect. That's great. I've never seen it.
It's a really, really solid movie.
Okay. Okay, then I'll have to add that. It looks like I've got some bad nights ahead of me. Well, maybe one good night with Matt.
No, I mean, if you do Wicker Man, I apologize in advance. Also, I don't know if you've seen me tweet about this, the movie Next.
Yes.
That is on Netflix.
Okay.
That is the most infuriating plot twist in cinema history. Like, way worse than anything M. Night Shyamalan's ever done. You will watch it 90 minutes into this hour and 40-minute movie. You will be upset. And then you will be mad at me.
Okay. All right. I'm going to test that theory. I've got an hour and 40 minutes to kill. I'll watch next. It might be an hour and 40 minutes I wish I had back, but whatever. Oh,
it will 100% be an hour and 40 minutes you wish you had back, but it is an experience.
All right. Well, this has been great. Certainly one of the most entertaining segments we've ever had on Locked On Heat. The show will be back when the Heat will move on to face the Cleveland Cavaliers on Wednesday, and Wes and I will be back to preview the game, answer any listener questions. We want to thank our sponsor, Draft. Just a reminder, use the promo code LOHEAT. Get a free entry after you make your first deposit, and check out our Twitter account at LockedOnHeat for instructions on how to join our league and play against us during tonight's games. That's all we have today. Thank you for listening and subscribing, and a special thanks to you, Zach, for taking the time to join me on today's podcast. On the off chance that one of the few dozen people listening to this podcast don't know who you are, please tell them where they can find you and your work.
All the writing at fanragsports.com, podcasting at leveragethechat.com, or just search my name in the iTunes store or Stitcher or something like that, and something will come up. Either Talk Hoops will come up or the Basketball Friends will come up. And then for all your Nick Cage tweets, at Talk Hoops on Twitter.
That's the place to be. I mean, everybody, if you're listening to this podcast and, again, you're not following Zach, you're making a huge mistake. So go and do that as soon as possible. Just a quick reminder, you can send us mailbag questions and inquiries about advertising by emailing us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. You can also tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music courtesy of Mojave Wild. I'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, Zach.
Thank you. Anytime.